we just have a half hour of all of us saying fuck, it'll be
That's actually most of our podcast.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with Greta Christina about her book, Why Are You Atheists So Angry? 99 Things That Piss Off the Godless. We talk about what pisses her off and what pisses us off.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Hi, and welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Nick Glover.
Hi.
And we are extremely pleased to have on the podcast with us today, Greta Christina.
Hello.
Yay. She is the author of a book called, I just read it. Why Are You Atheists So Angry? 99 Things That Piss Off the Godless, which I think is a great title for a book. And we are going to talk about that book and some other things. So thanks for joining us here today.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks for having me. I feel like I need to give you a little warning. I'm starting to get a cold. So if I'm a little raspy and a little snotty, just I apologize for that. You know, I should have taken Airborne, you know, because that stuff isn't bullshit. You know, you know, it totally works. No, really, a friend of a friend of mine told me that they got on an airplane and didn't get sick.
Oh, my God.
Therefore, works.
That's
wow.
Amazing.
So, that is amazing.
That's
confirmation that is unbiased.
Yes. I do also want to do a shout out to Skeptech because we're recording live at the Skeptech conference. And there are people watching us, and it makes us incredibly uncomfortable.
Yes, we hate attention.
We hate attention. That's why we do a podcast every week.
I just hate people.
So, Greta, let me ask you, what made you decide to write the book? Or why are you atheists so angry?
Okay, so as an atheist writer, as atheist blogger, I write for this blog called, very cleverly, Greta Christina's Blog.
Brilliant.
I know, right? Super genius. And, you know, I've been writing about atheism for many years, and this question came up a lot, usually from, you know, believers who were, in many cases, kind of concern trolling, and but in some cases seemed sincere, about why is it that you know, this so-called new atheist movement is so angry? Why are so many of you so angry? And it seemed to have never occurred to them that the answer might possibly be because we have legitimate things to be angry about. And so I wrote this blog post called Atheist in Anger, that was sort of this litany of things that I, as an atheist, was angry about and that many other atheists are angry about, and it went foom all over the internet. It was the first piece that I ever wrote that really went seriously viral. And clearly, a lot of people, a lot of atheists, this really resonated with. You know, they felt like, yeah, I get this question all the time, and it really upsets me and irritates me because I feel like my anger is legitimate and it's not being validated, it's being trivialized. And so I was like, okay, clearly there's a book here. One of the things that gave me the impetus for it was I gave a talk. I turned it into a talk, and I gave that talk at the Skepticon conference, and the video of that also kind of went foom all over the internet. Mm-hmm. It has like 150,000 hits at this point,
awesome,
or something like that. And so I was like, okay, clearly there's an audience for, you know, for this, and clearly there's a lot of atheists who really respond to this and that this really resonates with. So.
Yeah.
It definitely resonates.
Yeah, it definitely resonated with me. I had an experience. Last year, we all work at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival, and after hours, we all sit around campfires and drink and talk. And somebody came up, and I blog about atheism, and I often blog about things that piss me off. And he came up, and he was like, I wanted to talk to you. You know, you seem kind of like an angry atheist. And I was like, okay, well, what does that mean? And he proceeded to tell me what he believed as far as God and everything like that. Never really got around to explaining to me what he meant by me being an angry atheist. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted him to justify why I shouldn't be angry, mm-hmm, about the things that I was angry about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I think that the book, as I've been reading it, it's a really nice, and the unfortunate thing about the book is you get updated every day. Because there's something new... There's something new that happens every day that you're like, this pisses me off too.
Yeah.
But what
are we up to, 106?
Yeah. Oh, so more than that. I mean, one of the things actually that I say in the book is that one of the things that makes me angry is that this book is such a tiny little sliver. You know, I could have written the encyclopedia of everything that pisses me off about religion and not have been done. It could have been 999,999 things that piss off the godless and we wouldn't be done. Somebody would be emailing me, said, you didn't mention this.
I feel
like sometimes it's not even angry about. You can make like a calm, collected, rational complaint and you just say, hey guys, I don't think this should be this way. And people will see it as criticism of their culture, their beliefs, their whatever, and they might interpret it as a personal attack, and therefore you're angry, you're pissed off, you're irrational.
Well, and I think we especially see that about religion because religion has gotten such a free pass.
Right.
You know, it has this protection from criticism. There's this idea that criticizing or questioning people's religion, even saying, why do you believe what you believe? What evidence do you have for your beliefs? That's seen as intolerant and bigoted. It gets a free pass. And so there's something that a reader on my blog said, which is people are so used to whispering around religion that an everyday voice sounds like a shout.
Yeah.
And when we're just saying, hey, you know, this is kind of messed up, people hear, you know, screaming and tearing hair out and punching and foaming at the mouth.
Well, I think too, you know, I've had this in my family and people I know where me being an atheist somehow damages their beliefs and somehow damages their own faith and they take it personally that I don't believe what they believe because they like me. And so what I find interesting is how, you know, we do whisper around religion, but at the same time, this idea that you cannot be intolerant of anything. You have to tolerate everything. Otherwise you're a bad person. It's like, I don't tolerate your religious beliefs. I don't think I should have to.
Yeah.
I mean, we can compartmentalize and not talk about them, ignore each other's, you know, whatever, but to say that I have to be okay with all the stuff that your church does, otherwise I'm a bigot, seems pretty wrong to me.
There's a guy the three of us know, I really like this guy, he's an anti-vaxxer. And we just, in order for us to get along as like, grown-ups and adults and people that generally like each other, there's a topic we just never talk about around each other. And like, I'm sure it just eats away at him. I know it eats away at me. Like, I just want to
slap him.
As
a parent of two children and two children who are autistic and two children who have been vaccinated and somebody who is aware that those don't have anything to do with each other, it just makes me really angry.
And we've come full circle.
I wanted to touch on a couple of things that I pulled out of your book just because, you know, they resonate with me. What we're going to do is we are going to actually get a copy of your book and we're going to give it away to listeners. And we didn't talk about this ahead of time. I had an idea, guys. I hope you're okay with it. So.
Oh, no, not an idea.
Oh, no, it's crazy. So what I'm going to encourage is anybody who listens to this podcast, put in the comments something that pisses you off. And if you put something in the comments, then we'll draw randomly from those people and we will give a copy of Greta's book to one of those people. So number six, and I picked this because I am a parent. I'm angry that so many parents and religious leaders terrorize their children with vivid, traumatizing stories of eternal burning and torture. And it goes on. But I mean, that's one of the things that, as a parent, it does to me feel like, and I think you even say it, that it feels like child abuse. Mm-hmm. It feels like the most horrible thing you can do to your kid is say, oh, by the way, if you don't act in this perfect idea of what a person should act like from this book that was written thousands and thousands of years ago.
Desert Survival Guide.
You're going to spend an eternity being tortured.
Yeah.
And that's the most horrifying thing. The thought of even telling my kids that. Mm-hmm. And I, as a parent, again, look at it and go, how can this all-loving God that we talk about do something so horrible to a child? And it's like, theoretically, this God should be loving my child more than I love my child myself. And yet, I can't conceive of any awful thing my child can do. And I can conceive of some really awful things. but they're my children, and I can't conceive of my kids ever doing something so awful that I would want them to be punished for eternity.
Tortured,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah, tortured. Yeah, well, and there's so many things wrong with the idea of hell. I could go on forever about the idea of hell. You know, as many people have pointed out, it's like infinite punishment for finite crimes.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, it's like no matter how horrible a person you are, you know, your crimes are finite, and the idea that you would be tortured infinitely, with infinite pain and for an infinite period of time, it's appalling. But it especially upsets me when it comes to children, because children, first of all, they have such vivid imaginations, you know, and they, you know, when you talk to them about, you know, being burned, you know, forever, they can picture it. I mean, you talk with people who were brought up in these kinds of beliefs, and, you know, they talk about just having nightmares.
Oh, yeah.
It's really upsetting. It's really traumatizing. And children are wired, for very good evolutionary reasons, to believe what authority figures tell them.
Yeah.
And so I think that that means we have, you know, as parents or just as people, if we have children in our lives, we have an obligation to make sure that what we tell children, that we're pretty sure that it's true.
Yeah.
You know, and this idea of terrifying children whose brains are wired to believe us with something we have no reason to think is true, and that's really unbelievably emotionally manipulative, that just really appalls me.
It really is a violation, I feel, because I mean, I know when I was like 3 or 4, I went to a Lutheran preschool, like a born-again Lutheran preschool that just happened to have openings for daycare, basically. And I came home and I was like crying. I wouldn't eat. My mom couldn't figure out what was wrong. And she finally got it out of me that they had told me that Jesus died and it was all my fault. And I was like, they tortured him to death and that's my fault. I did that. It's my sin. And my mom was like, okay. Like yanked me out of that school. But it's like those teachers are trusted with, you know, you, as a kid, you trust the teachers as much as your parents. I mean, that's why some kids will accidentally call their teachers mom. You know, it's that they fill that parent role. And if that person is telling you those things, and then if you have parents on top of that throwing even more on there, it's so awful. And even someone who you don't love, like a teacher, can get in your head like that when you're that little.
Yeah.
I actually want to throw in a plug here for a book that isn't mine. It's The Good News Club by Catherine Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, she writes about how evangelicals are using this loophole in the church-state separation laws to get to do evangelism in the public school.
Oh, we've talked about this, yeah.
And it is really upsetting because, you know, the kids don't make this distinction. You know, it's this thing where, you know, the school bell rings and then you have this club, quote, you know, air quotes. Mm-hmm. You can't see air quotes on the radio, can you? air quotes club. That's, you know, teaching about, you know, religion. And it's a very extreme evangelical version of religion.
They're using the authority of the school and the institution that...
Yeah. Exactly, yeah, to make kids trust them. And kids can't distinguish between, you know, you have your math teacher at 3 o'clock who's telling you about addition and subtraction, and then at 3:30 the bell rings and you have somebody coming in and teaching you why you have to obey God no matter what.
And anything about it, just the fact that God exists and that there's Jesus and all of that. I mean, it's right from the start, it's imprinting something that didn't need to be imprinted.
And again, there's no evidence for it. You have no solid proof that this is right. You just and you're taught that what you're doing your kids a favor.
Yeah.
Right? You're saving your kids from eternal punishment. And it's a self-perpetuating kind of abuse cycle because your kids grow up to abuse their kids in the same way.
Exactly,
because they believe that it's right. And and because we're taught that we can't question that belief system, it allows it to continue without anybody really challenging it.
Yeah.
And that makes me super angry.
I wish it were illegal to let anyone under the age of 14 go to any sort of religious church or mosque or anything like that. I just wish that you had to reach the age of reason before you could be brought into that.
Not even illegal, just like our culture was that we let people come to their own conclusions and make their own decisions about that. Yeah. Like, why regulate it? Just...
Sure.
You know,
Because it's like there's a part of me that feels the same way you do. It's like, you know, that should be illegal, but then, you know, you know, parents do have the right within limitations to bring up their kids with, you know, whatever ridiculous beliefs they have. But I do, I would love to see us create more social pressure against this. And this is one of the big reasons why I'm such a fan of atheist visibility generally.
Yes. Right.
You know, people are always talking about, why do atheists have to proselytize? It's like, well, you know what? They're all proselytizing.
Yeah.
You know, why shouldn't we get our ideas out there?
Well, with water.
And I think that that's, you know, the real pushback is if kids are growing up and they're being proselytized to, but they have friends who are out atheist, and they know there's an alternative, mm-hmm. and they know there's people who mm-hmm. don't believe what their parents believe,
yeah.
I think mm-hmm. that's something of an inoculation.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm very proud. My eldest son is an atheist, and he came to that conclusion on his own. I did not guide him to that. I felt like I wanted to give him the opportunity to make the decision himself, because I feel that one of the most dangerous things as an atheist parent that I can do is push atheism the way religious parents push religion. I want to make sure that he knows what his mother and I believe and that we don't agree with religion and why, but at the same time, I want him to make that decision. And he's very, very comfortable with it. And I think that his comfort with it is a great thing, and it's important, because if you're comfortable with being an atheist, then you just talk about it, and you don't talk about it, I'm an atheist, why aren't you? You're just like, no, I'm an atheist, and that sets out there to people, this is an okay thing to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not something you hide.
It's not something that you have to pretend doesn't exist. It's not a part of you that needs to be compartmentalized mm-hmm. away from the rest of the world. It's something that you can say, it is part of me, and I'm proud of it, and I'm willing to talk about it and mm-hmm. share it.
Yeah, and I think that actually creates some of the biggest pushback against religion. I mean, I am, as people who have been to this conference know, I am in fact an advocate of getting into arguments with believers about religion. I have no problem with that. I don't think everybody has to do it, but I think that it's mm-hmm. a perfectly reasonable thing to do. But I also think that just coming out as an atheist is one of the biggest arguments against religion that exists, because religion relies on social consent to perpetuate itself. It's like the emperor's new clothes.
Yes.
You know, it's such a bad idea. You know, it's such a ridiculous idea. Certainly in the modern age, when we understand a lot more about how the world works than we did, you know, 100,000 years ago. But it's such a bad idea. But when everybody agrees to it, when everybody around you is agreeing to it, you know, that kind of perpetuates, you know, that's a big part of
everyone's
what perpetuates
got a blind eye towards it.
Everybody has a blind eye towards it. Everybody around you believes it. So if you are having questions, you tend to suspend those questions. But the minute that people start saying the emperor has no clothes,
mm-hmm. how dare you?
You know, just, and I think that's a big part of why people do get offended by atheist visibility, is that our very existence
yeah.
is telling them, you know, there's no way to say I am an atheist without implying if you believe in God, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of acceptance for other people's beliefs, even within belief. Like, there are plenty of Christians who are like, you know, I believe in this, but other people believe in this. And that's cool. We agree to disagree. Uh-huh. But as soon as you say atheist, it's like, that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
Other people can believe in the same God under different rules or different circumstances, a different book, or even, you know, you're Buddhist. Oh, that's cool. You believe in something. Yeah. You're not one of those.
As long as you believe in something. That's
right.
As long as you believe in some kind of bullshit that has no evidence to support it,
right.
We're cool.
Just as long as you're not saying there's nothing, because that's not cool.
Because, you know, other people believing, it supports the basic concept of faith,
right.
of religious faith. And, you know, and we're obviously, mm-hmm. we question that.
Yeah.
I'm going to, another one of the things you put that pissed me off. Number 15, I'm angry that the Bamiyan Buddha statues in Afghanistan were dynamited by the Taliban. That's another great example of where I think religion does tremendous damage is in artistic expression.
Yeah.
You know, and that the Taliban goes in and dynamites these amazing statues that have been around for thousands of years, and they just blew them up because religion.
Yeah. Yeah,
literally, that was their only excuse.
Idolatry.
They were idols. And these statues were like over 15,000 years old. I mean, these were mm-hmm. magnificent, monumental works of art and hugely important historical relics.
Shared human history.
Yeah. And the Taliban said, nope, our God says no, so dynamite.
Yeah.
Which is, the no idols part of Islam is so funny to me, because it's supposed to be no graven images, so that we don't get the wrong idea, so that we don't go the wrong way with our religion. But it's now taken to such a ridiculous extreme that the original meaning of that is completely gone and lost. It's like the no pictures of Muhammad. Mm-hmm. No pictures of Muhammad, so we don't worship him. So that we focus on the fact that it's our God we should worship and not this man.
Mm-hmm. And then when there's a picture of Muhammad, we freak out to the point of declaring a holy war.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What it's really saying is no Muslims should put the image of Muhammad down, because Muslims should worship Allah, not Muhammad. Anyone who's not Muslim can draw pictures of Muhammad. That's fine. Like, go ahead.
Yeah, and just thinking about you know, going and looking at art from the Renaissance and stuff like that, mm-hmm. you know, before that, almost all art is religious iconography. And while there is phenomenal art from that period, I feel that it is incredible the kind of art that we're getting now, when you no longer have that religious requirement
yeah.
in the production of art.
Yeah, when you can make art about anything, and religion is one of the things you can make art about, mm-hmm. but you can make mm-hmm. art about anything. Well, it is one of the things Zach Wiener-Smith was speaking at the conference yesterday about censorship. And, you know, one of the issues that I have with censorship is that it's very hard to draw a line. Once you start going down that road, once you start going down the road that says, you know, we're going to not let you say bad words on the radio or whatever, you know, it's a very slippery slope to, you know, we're legally not going to permit you to make art that isn't about religion, to we're actually going to blow up your art
yeah.
because
yeah.
Because it's a religion we don't agree with.
The words thing is something that's a big cause of mine, because I just don't understand how certain collections of sounds are not okay and others are. Like, why is it perfectly okay to say, are you friggin' kidding me on TV instead of are you fucking kidding me? They mean the same thing.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
the same sentence. It's yeah. just up,
it's a,
not
it's,
ig.
It's a placeholder for that exact that, word.
Yeah,
you're using it in the same way.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a weird thing.
I know, my favorite example of that, Nerd Time, was in the new Battlestar Galactica when they were using the word fracking, and they
yeah.
used it exactly
yeah.
always
yeah.
as you would use the word
you, frack.
Frack you, frack off. Let's go frack. Let's go
right.
behind, you know,
yeah.
behind the spaceship and frack.
They used it in all the same ways.
You know, and yet it got to be on TV, even though absolutely everybody knew what it meant
yeah.
because it had RA instead of you.
Yeah.
My kids have asked me that question. I mean, it's tricky when you have kids, and I think that when it comes to swear words, we try to avoid swearing around our children. But at the same time, my eldest son watches videos on YouTube with swear words on them all the time.
Also,
and
your kids are around me. So
yeah.
That's just
and my kids are around me. And I slip up a fucking lot.
Yeah.
So, but they know that there are times and places where using those kind of words is appropriate. And that's understandable. And watching my son watch these things on YouTube really raises the question in my mind of, well, why do we have this arbitrary requirement that on network television there can be no swearing?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the...
But you can show a corpse, like a gutted...
Yeah.
A gutted corpse. Like or like a raped girl,
right.
and they're like, she was raped
but somebody,
and beaten
in
to
in
death.
The
somebody
Dead
can't look at a gutted corpse and go, holy shit, that's awful.
Right.
In the Walking Dead finale, I saw someone stomp on a zombie's skull and
like
it caved
yeah.
in. It was like, that's awfully graphic.
But they can't say, watch out, there's fucking zombies. Like,
yeah. All right, so this is great. I would love to talk to you more about this book. It is a great book. I really enjoy it. I strongly encourage people
yeah.
to pick it up. But we are going to move on to our five questions. We did tell you about the five questions ahead of time. We like to warn people. We didn't warn people on our first couple of podcasts, and that was really kind of a dick move.
And they were like, huh?
Yeah. So we're going to start with what's the best movie that you've seen in the last 30 days?
Okay, well, I don't think this was in the last 30 days. I think it was a little older than that. But the movie that really stuck with me that I saw recently was The Sessions.
Oh, yeah.
And it's I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting that. It's this movie based on a true story about this man who is a writer and a poet and who is profoundly disabled. He'd been a polio victim. And his experiences with a sexual surrogate. You know, and a sex surrogate mm-hmm. is, you know, somebody, essentially like a therapist that you pay to try to help you get over your anxieties about sex. And part of the therapy is that they have sex with you. And it was about these experiences, and first of all, it's just kind of this window into this world that I wasn't really all that familiar with.
Yeah.
But also it's just this very intense content about intimacy and about caretaking and about sort of ways that taking care of somebody is both this very intimate relationship and at the same time is kind of distancing. You know, and yet how it's a really important sometimes to have that
yeah.
that distance so that
yeah.
you know that sort of almost like a power imbalance, because you're doing a job and you're trying
therapy.
To help somebody get along.
It's therapy. Professionalism. Yeah.
It's a professional, you know, situation. But it's kind of odd to have a professional situation other than prostitution
yeah.
that's that where you're having sex with somebody, it's mm-hmm. a very intimate thing. And it just kind of struck a lot of chords with me, it was like mm-hmm. stuff having to do with intimacy and caretaking, and it was just fascinating movie. I highly, highly recommend it.
I know it's not totally appropriate, but all I can think of is an alternate title of like medical science prostitute, like mm-hmm. like I mean kind of like kind of sort of like or but like a psychologist, a therapist yeah. too, like it's a very complicated title.
Yeah. Well, one of the things another, you know, back before I was writing as much about atheism, I was writing a lot about sex, and I edited a book called Paying for It, A Guide by Sex yeah. Workers for Their Clients. Mm-hmm. And one of the common themes that came up is writings by sex workers giving advice to their clients about how to act towards them so that their sex workers will like them and give them a better time. And one of the themes that came up over and over again, and this is something I know from a lot of sex workers that I know, is that they do often experience the relationship as therapeutic, and there's a lot of customers who what they want is just to be touched.
Yeah. You know,
and what they want is just somebody to talk to. You know, it's like it's like lonely people. A lot of it is socially awkward people, and they just want some kind of human contact and human connection.
We need skin to skin.
And a lot of the times, it's like you have a 2-hour session and you have sex for 15 minutes and you talk for the rest of the time.
Yeah.
That's very, very common.
Yeah, that movie really interested me. I haven't seen it yet, so I appreciate that you brought it up. I will definitely make sure to watch it. Nick,
our second question is, who's your favorite atheist character?
I think there's a lot of choices to go with, but I think I have to go with Mal from Firefly.
All right. Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
I have some issues with Mal from Firefly because he plays into some of the stereotypes about atheists, you know, that atheists are cynical and so
mad
on.
Mad at God.
You know, they're mad at God and that they're cynical and, you know. But what I like about Mal is that he has this cynicism, but he also just has this tremendous sense of honor and doing the right thing.
Sure.
And, you know, he cares about trying to make the world a better place. And the cynicism is, it's not exactly a veneer, it's real, but it's just kind of ultimately, you know, the stronger impulse for him is being a good person.
Mm-hmm. And he has his own moral code.
He's good without God.
He's good without God in a really kind of funny and fun, entertaining way. You'd want to have a beer with him. You know?
Yes. So okay, our third question is, what is your geekiest hobby? And by that we mean like a hobby that is so geeky even geeks and nerds are like, wow.
They're impressed. They give you the big old thumbs up.
Yeah, they're like, that's really good.
I think I got to go with English country dancing.
Oh, wow.
Elaborate. So English country dancing is this dance form. If you've seen any Jane Austen movies,
sure.
that's what
yeah.
they're doing in the Jane Austen
sure,
movies.
Sure.
You know, it existed in mostly England in the, you know, 17th, 18th, 19th century, I think, mm-hmm. with history. People are going to be saying, no, that's wrong. Yeah.
Sorry, we're a comedy podcast. We don't fact check anything.
And so it's totally loved by the historical recreation nerds, which I'm also, you know,
we work at the Renaissance.
Renaissance Fair. About this. So basically, this is like Renaissance, Renaissance Fair, but like a couple centuries
sure.
later.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, sometimes people dress up in historical costumes and do it, and it's just kind of ridiculous.
What do you wear when you do it?
Well, it depends. If it's a historical recreation thing, then I usually go in drag. I usually dress like a like an awesome Regency buck, you know. Because nerd.
Yeah. Also, it's a little more comfortable from that century if you're going to dress. You might as well be a man. I mean, they're not gusseted and corseted and squeezed and pushed.
so that's really fun and. But sometimes you just wear like whatever comfortable clothes
sure,
you want to
sure.
wear.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
We have a friend that's in the court at our local Renaissance Festival, and
because nerd,
right? Yeah. And so she's always like, "You guys got to come dance with us.
Come
do the courtly dancing." And it's, I mean, that might not be the exact same time period, but it's such
it's
a fun. General like you know
it's
anachronistic
it's
thing.
It's similar.
And, yeah, she's always getting it. You know, we've done that a few times, and it's the weird rules and the touching, but not. Touching, mm-hmm. kind of distant, like
yes,
it's weird flirting.
Yeah.
It's really weird,
and it is very flirtatious because you're not like in each other's arms. It's sort of a lot of like you're coming to. There's all these you're dancing in patterns, and you're just like you're coming towards each other in a way and towards in a way.
Waiting
it's like
ooh,
we
moment.
Get to touch hands
now.
Yeah.
The anticipation.
And then
there's so much where you're distant from each other, because you're not close, you have eye contact.
Yes, exactly. It's all about the eye contact.
Facing them, yeah.
Well, and also with the way the English country dancing is done, is it's done in sets, and you move down the down and up the set, and so you're like you're dancing with different people every couple of minutes, and there's sort of that little flirtatious moment of, oh, I can't dance with you anymore. It's like, oh, hi there, you know, the next person.
17th century speed dating.
Totally, yes, exactly.
is your wife into this too?
Yes, she is. This is something that we do. This is something we do together. So.
That's super cool. That's romantic.
It is. It's very sweet.
All right, question number four, completely changing the subject. What is your favorite sandwich?
You know, this was the one of you. You emailed me these questions in advance, and this was one that I had the hardest time with, honestly. Because my taste in food is that I like variety. Mm. It's like I couldn't eat the same anything every day. So my favorite sandwich is whatever they have at the awesome sandwich place on the corner near where I live.
What's one that you've liked in the past?
They do a lot of stuff with smoked trout. They like smoked trout, and it's like this sort of, you know, pretentious localvore, you know, foodie stuff, which I'm, you know, a big sucker for. So it's like, you know, smoked trout and bitter greens and, you know, avocado and, you know, cilantro sauce and, you know, it's... I'm very fond of that, but really, it's like kind of whatever they have that day is
what's
my
the name of the
favorite.
Shop?
It's called Pal's Takeaway.
Okay.
And it's in. It's this great thing. It's just like a little pop up in the corner grocery store.
Awesome.
And where? I'm sorry. Where do you live?
San Francisco.
I thought so, but I wanted to make sure I was right. San Francisco. So we'll look that up and we'll make sure we'll put a link, because my brother lives in San Francisco and he'll probably be like, ooh.
Also, the advantage of Pal's Takeaway is it's right across the street from Dynamo Donuts, which best donuts ever.
Oh, all right. Sandwich and donuts.
God,
I'm hungry.
Hopefully there's a way to combine the two, some sort of donut sandwich. So our final question, and I know it might be hard to narrow it down, but what's the stupidest thing you've heard about your atheism?
Okay. This isn't exactly about my atheism. It's about their belief, but it was somebody who was arguing with me about atheism. Mm. And this has become a running joke between me and Ingrid now for years. It's the argument from Tigers.
What?
Okay, so here's the argument. This person was saying atheism is ridiculous. It's ridiculous to assert atheism because there are things that are stronger than people, you know.
Okay.
Like, you know, tigers and bears and so on are stronger than people. They can eat us.
Sure.
Therefore, there has to be something that's stronger than everything.
Like a food chain type.
Like you know, because this event, you know, infinite recursion, therefore God.
So, wouldn't there then have to be something that's stronger than God?
Well, yes.
When the global fist fight happens, someone has to be able to break it all up.
Yes, exactly.
I want a
t-shirt that says when there's a global fist fight that happens, somebody has to be there to break
tiger
that
right
up.
In the face.
You're not fooling her. It's tigers the whole way down. That's great. I've never heard that particular argument before.
Yeah, no, that was, I mean, and I will give credit to this person. It was a new one. You know, I thought points for originality. I thought I had heard every bad argument for religion that there was, because I'd been doing this for a while. And, you know, if you get into these discussions, you see patterns.
Yeah.
You know, the same bad apologetics come up over and over and over again. This was new. So credit where credit is due to the argument from
Tigers. It's really novel and brilliant.
Innovatively stupid.
It's like that person sat down and analyzed every other argument you'd gotten and was like, well, none of these worked. So I need to try something new. So tigers.
If tigers ever learn how to make weapons, we're done.
If they get thumbs, that's it.
Oh, no.
That's all she wrote.
Well, they can't, because there's no such thing as evolution. So don't worry about it.
Yeah, they're screwed. They were created that way, and they are stuck.
Oh, that's great.
This has been a great conversation, Brad. We really appreciate you coming on our podcast today. We really appreciate Skeptech allowing us to host you on our podcast today, and we appreciate all the folks in the audience who did not have an opportunity to ask a question, but thank you for coming out and listening to our conversation. I am Tim. This is Nick and Molly. We are Geeks Without God. You can find us at geekswithoutgod.com.
Facebook and Twitter, and do you have anything
to plug? Nick is encouraging me to say something, and I don't know what he's talking about, so I'm going to let him say it himself.
If you want to take this opportunity to plug anything, we've mentioned the book several times, but if you want to mention your blog.
All right, plug time. First of all, my book is called Why Are You Atheists So Angry? 99 Things That Piss Off the Godless. It's available in print. It's available in ebook in like a zillion different formats. It's on Amazon. It's on Nook. It's on Smashwords in a billion formats. It's available in audiobook, on Audible, and all kinds of places. And also it's available in actual physical dead tree form.
Whoa, whoa.
I know,
what?
Right? I know.
And we are going to give away a dead tree form of that book.
Yeah, they're going to give away it. And I blog at Greta Christina's blog, which is at freethoughtblogs.com/Greta.
Excellent.
Great. Fantastic.
And I am going to remind you, we're going to be giving away a copy of Greta's book. Please comment on this episode and just tell us one thing that pisses you off as an atheist. So thank you again for listening. We are going to sign off.
Thanks, everyone. Yeah,
thanks for coming.
Woo!
This week's Geeks Without God was recorded live at the Skeptech Conference. We'd like to thank them for inviting us.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God, and you can like us on Facebook, because everybody likes us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
We win because tigers.
Yeah.